Welcome today to our Intuit series with Outstanding Professionals. I'm Stephen Abaraki, and I'm conducting our regular chat sessions with Kelly Gottlieb, Professor Emeritus at the University of Toronto. Kelly is one of the most significant contributors to computing education, the profession, and industry worldwide. Kelly, thank you for coming in today to share insights with the audience.
Thank you for inviting me, Steve. Glad to be here.
Kelly, before we get into your substantive contributions to IFIP and KIPS, can you provide some background on what triggered your interest in nonprofit society work?
Well, I got interested in privacy, in database. You may remember, well, I don't think our audience will remember this, it happened a long time ago, but there was in the United States Congress, there was a very considerable set of hearings on how databases information in databases were affecting the privacy of individuals. And this spilled over into Canada, and the Canadian government set up a privacy task force, actually, with Eric Kearns, who was the minister then, and Richard Gwynne was on it, Alan Gottlieb, and myself were members of this task force, and looked at how computers would affect privacy. We wrote a report, and eventually led, of course, to our privacy legislation. So that was one set of interest. Another set of interest was that there was a good deal of interest written in the about how predictions would affect the developing countries, predictions about computer predictions, and the worldwide interest in, and that spilled over into my interest on how computers. So databases was always an area of in which I specialized and did research, and as it affected society is really what got me going.
You know, can you share your background link with E.F. Codd?
Background with Codd? Well, Ted Codd actually worked in Canada for IBM for a little while, and I got to meet him and actually invited him to give, I think it was one or two lectures in at the University of Toronto. This is long before we had a computer department, but we already had an electronic computer. So that's where I met him. I continued to meet him over the years on several other occasions, but never had a close relationship with him. But we were friends and did talk and meet with each other.
So this is the Codd relational database thing.
Exactly.
You know, you were involved with two successive conferences at the University of Toronto. How did that build into the predecessor of KIPS, the Computing and Data Processing Society of Canada?
We got the first the second computer in the world, the Ferranti computer at University of Toronto. The first one was UNIVAC, and the second was delivered to us at University of Toronto. And there was a tremendous interest in it. ACM actually held what they called a national conference, the Association of the Computer Ministry, and they held a national conference in Toronto in 1952. That was the year the computer came. And when we got it, we found that there was a considerable interest from at least one group of people in that computer, and that was actuaries and insurance companies. Actuaries were used to using IBM machines for doing all kinds of calculations on life contingencies and so on. So they were very interested. And in fact, the second computer that ever came into Canada was at the Canada Life Insurance Company. It was the UNIVAC. And so we offered offered to give some courses, and not in the graduate courses, but in continuing education school. And we found there was a very considerable interest from the business community, starting with insurance companies, but banks and lots of other things. And that time already, ACM was an organization in the United States, so we decided, we and and supported strongly by IBM, decided that a conference in Canada, which particularly we would invite the business community that were interested in computers, would be worthwhile. And the first one was very successful, and so was the second, and essentially that formed the basis for the what we first called the Computing and Data Processing Society of Canada.
And I guess that eventually then became CIPS, the Canadian Information Processing.
Yes. Later on, IFIP, the International Federation of Information Processing Society, was formed. Actually, I was a member of the committee which met in Paris under the auspices of UNESCO that formed IFIP. And various computing societies came up in different countries, and they generally used the word Information Processing Society, and the Computing and Data Processing Society decided to change its name to, you know, fit that pattern.
I see. So it's tied in with the International Federation for Information Processing.
Exactly.
So what led you to taking on the presidency of this association?
Well, I actually issued the invitations around, supported by IBM all around, and I was very, very active. But as I say, we had a very considerable support from the business community, so I didn't want to be the first president. The first one was, I think, Fred Thomas from the Hydro, who incidentally also were interested in computers, and we worked with the Hydro first with punch card installations and later on with the Ferranti computer in doing calculations for the flooding of the seaway. So we were active partners with the Hydro, and Fred Thomas of the Hydro, I think, became the first president. And then it was Hudson Stowe of Manufacturers Life. And as I said, he was an actuary and the insurance company were interested. So the first two presidents, they were the first two presidents, and then they urged me to take on the job, which I did. I was the third president of KIPS.
So more generally, can you describe what it was like to be president and the kinds of duties you did at the time?
It wasn't any as widespread a group as it is now, of course, you know, nationally across the country. But there was an intense meeting. We met regularly as a committee and about once a month, and we planned conferences, and it was a small but serious group, and I've forgotten how long I was president, probably 1 or 2 years.
Can you describe your involvement with KIPS post-presidency?
I stayed on active for a number of years and went on lectures tours when they formed sections in Waterloo and so on. What happened later on, I became very active in IFIP. So I was the, and of course Kip was the Canadian representative, so I played a fairly active part in IFIP, and in fact, when IFIP, they formed what they call technical committees, And I finally decided to have one in Computers and Society, which is still going on, of course, TC9. And that was an interesting story because the Russians were very active in IFIP, and the delegates were very anxious not to have TC9 interested in social issues because they were allowed, the Russian delegates were allowed to go to IFIP meeting without having the security people accompany them because it was technical matters. But as soon as IFIP became interested in social issues, they were afraid that they would have to be accompanied by their KVD people. So they were very strongly against TC9. However, the IFIP wanted it, and when when the voting came in IFIP, actually this was the voting in Budapest, I think, or no, in Romania. When the voting came, TC9, it turned out that the Hungarians and the Romanians voted for it. They were, of course, satellites of the Russians. And that was the very first time that those countries publicly took a measure that was opposed by the Soviet Union. So it was really, setting up that TC9 was really quite an interesting event.
I see. That's quite a remarkable story. So here you are, you're associated with KIPPS, and then because of that, you're also then involved in the initial founding of IFIP, this International Federation for Information Processing, in 1959, and that then led to the formation of the Technical Committee 9 and this whole connection then with Russia and so forth. So it's just a remarkable kind of series of linkages.
And I was quite active in TC9. It was a very... it held a number of conferences in which I was program chairman and in different countries, and you know, it traveled. We, and of course, IFA brought conferences to Canada. There were several of them, and that helped. That was important for KIPPS, because IFIP was much more important in the early days, in its early days, than it is now, much more visible. Now the national societies, I think, have a bigger profile. But IFIP had the big profile then. So bringing the international conferences to Canada really raised the profile of information technology and of KIPPS.
You know, can you profile Isaac Auerbach and your link to him?
Well, I knew Auerbach very well. We were really friends. He was the founding spirit of IFIP, and in fact, when he retired, he wanted me to become. And he said he would support me becoming president of IFIP. But I really didn't want to do that. It meant a lot of would have meant a lot of international travel. IFIP headquarters was in Geneva, and although I had grants from National Research Council and Defense Research Board, and used that to support whatever travel I did, I didn't think it would be right to do all that extensive traveling. So that was one reason. And also I had graduate students and doing research work, and becoming president of IFIP would have meant a lot more administrative work than I was ready to take on. So I really declined Auerbach's invitation to go for the presidency.
You know, you talked about this briefly before, about you becoming involved in social issues and privacy, but also, can you also link that to this report that you wrote for the United Nations and just describe the background and context of that?
Yeah, that was a very interesting exercise. United Nations finally decided to that computer could be important, and they the General Assembly instructed the president, who was a Utah, to write to prepare a report on how computers could help developing countries, and they picked about six, I think it was eight people from different countries to represent this. And because I had done this work on privacy, incidentally, this came out of the Social and Economic Council of Privacy. So it wasn't a technical thing. It was how it could help social issues. But although I, you know, by and large, in those years, computers were still looked upon as technical things, there was this growing interest and how they could be applied in much bigger areas. So although I was a physicist by training, I was because of the reports we'd written on privacy, I was selected to be the Canadian representative to this report. And it was quite an interesting operation, principal U.S. one. Well, I'll have to think for a minute for his name now because we're a good friend, but we wrote that report together, and we were kind of tech, this ISOP report. We prepared this in preparing that report, we were sent around to quite a few places in Europe and other places to see what the reaction was of the AFIP countries. And everywhere we went, although this was an undertaking of the United Nations, there wasn't any really understanding. They thought computers were for doing aircraft calculations and used by mathematicians. And there wasn't quite an understanding of the in society. So, for example, we'd go to United Nations, UNESCO, and because we were the representative of Yu Tong, who is the president of the United Nations, protocol demanded that we be met by the head of an organization. So we would meet somebody like Mabou, the president of UNESCO, or to ILO, the International Labor Organizations, or to the World Bank. We went to all of these places, and we'd be met by the top. But in about 5 minutes, we'd be passed four levels down the hierarchy, because this wasn't really considered as a serious effort. So, as I say, wherever we went, we had this experience of meeting the top and being handed down from one to the other until we could find somebody lower down on some nerd in technical ranks that could talk to us. And I remember at the World Bank, being told, okay, now what do you want to know about this boondoggle of yours? And then when we wrote that report, we had a good section at the beginning, maybe a third or of it, on how computers work. But this was very foreign to the, about binary systems and things like that. This was very foreign to ECOSOC. They weren't interested in that. And we had a meeting in Romania where we presented this draft report, and the main people at ECOSOC tore it apart with justification. I mean, I think they were really right. So we had to present the second version of the report about 6 weeks later. So we went back to Toronto and United States, and we rewrote that report. We just completely rewrote it and put the emphasis on management system and on how computers could help in census bureaus and things that come into social issues. And it then turned out that report turned out to be the best-selling report the United Nations had done up to that date. It was so popular when it was finally published.
But Yutong's name was on it, right?
The report is the report of the Secretary General to United Nations, and in the back, it lists the technical committee who were responsible, so our name appears in it all right, but we wrote the whole thing. I mean, in fact, not only did we write it, it was kind of interesting. In its final version, the UN couldn't handle the secretarial work, so we did a lot of it at the University of Toronto and presented, the draft, the document that eventually was published by United Nations. But everything was all done, even the secretarial work was done in our place.
I think it's just an amazing kind of part of history, and Canada playing a leading role and really you guiding that sort of vision.
Well, I tell you, we took a lot of satisfaction in being told that this was a UN bestseller after having the thing torn apart. But on the other hand, if they hadn't done this criticism, which was justified, and you know, playing down the technical aspects and paying more attention to the social and managerial aspect, it would have been, you know, an inadequate report. So I think, but they couldn't believe that we had rewritten it so completely in a period of about 4 weeks.
You know, Kelly, you've received a number of honors from the International Federation for Information Processing. Can you overview them?
Well, when Auerbach died, they formed. Well, first of all, they do have something which I think is a 25-year kind of honor, and that, you know, that just came by being a survivor. But after Auerbach died, there was. They established an Auerbach medal, and various countries nominate their, you know, person for that, and Kipps nominated me, so I was the first recipient of that, and for that I really have been grateful to Kipps. They took the trouble for that. I'm still a member of the History Committee of TC9, so I still have a wife up, rather, so I still have some contact with them, not extensive. Most of what shall I say, the pro bono work I do now is with ACM, which is really still quite considerable, even to this day as co-chair of the award committee. I spend a lot of time on it, but I still have, as you know, kind of a modest connection with Kipps and the Fellows Committee and with IFIP on the History Committee and so on.
Well, you know, you just brought up this whole idea of a fellow. Many in the audience don't know what that means. So you are a fellow of a number of groups, including with Kipps, the Canadian Information Processing Society. Can you describe what this represents?
Well, it varies in the thing. I'm a fellow of four organizations, so I call myself a jolly good fellow. The fellow of the Royal Society of Canada. Now, that is a research, essentially, that's based upon research. The society, you know, holds meetings and writes reports and sometimes commissioned by government. And it's a non-honorary thing, and its members are only fellows. So you get nominated by existing fellows, and the Royal Society has a committee that votes on it. Then the British Computer Society set up a fellow program quite a few years ago, and that was really based, I was invited to become a fellow, and I was a member of the British Computer Society along with ACM because of my IFIP connection. I became a fellow of that, but actually some years ago, because I've been making a lot fewer trips to Europe, I never actually remember what the requirements were, but it was a case essentially of contributions, either in technical contributions or service contributions, I assume that made a fellow. But since I stopped being a member, I don't use a designation. I don't know that I'm entitled to or not. ACM fellows is a different story. It was created about 3 years ago, and it's a class of membership. They've incidentally, since then, they've also created other classes called senior and distinguished. So it has a student membership, professional membership, senior, distinguished, and the highest grade of membership is fellows. And there, the criteria are either technical, educational, or contributions that come from either academics or practitioners, or service, and the Fellows Committee meets, or they generally get about 80 to 100 nominations a year. They become fellows for only about a third of them. Almost restrictive. The IEEE, the Institute of Electrical Engineers, Electrical and Electronic Engineers, Computer Society, also has a fellow program, and that too is based upon either some combination of technical contributions and service contributions. And of course, the KIPP Fellow Program is essentially in the pattern of the IEEE and the ACM.
In fact, your good friend Vince Cerf, isn't he the current head of the Fellows Committee or chair of the Fellows Committee for the ACM?
No, he's not. He's not. Vince is on the Turing Award Committee. Actually, as my position as co-chair of the ACM Award Committee, ACM has about 18 committees, and I'm the overall co-chair, and my one of the, along with Jim Horning, whom I knew for a long time, the co-chair, and one of our, we're appointed by the president of ACM, and one of the principal jobs is to populate these other committees, the Fellows Committee, the Turing Award Committee, the and all the various technical Grace Murray Hopper Committee and so on. And the other is to set the general policies regarding the awards system. And as I say, that actually keeps me quite busy. I do a lot of email. And certain of these committees, most of them work by email and conference call, but certain of them, of which the Turing Committee and the Fellow Committee are examples, actually meet to make the final decisions on recommendations of the becoming a fellow or winning an award.
Well, I know with your incredible history, your deep insights are always of value in the different fellows groups. I know that you were involved in a recent KIPPS fellows meeting, and again, the different fellows are reaching out to your experience. So,
well, I've been around. I'm a survivor, so I guess that, and I still like to think I have my wits about me.
Well, you know, as we come to a close with this interview, is there anything else that you'd like to share about KIPPS or about IFIP?
I'm glad to see KIPPS, reinventing itself. I think you have an important part in that last year in your presidency, and I'm glad. And I think the fellow is a good program in KIPPS. I'd like, comparing KIPPS and ACM, KIPPS has a lot of is very strong on its business and practitioners. It's less strong on the conferences it has that has sort of technical components. And yet, in Canada, we do a lot of now very good technical stuff. We only have to look at RIMS and all the work we do on gaming and people on Pixar. We have a lot of Canadians in very high and important offices of Microsoft and the United States and Canada. So I would like to see KIPPS have at least a stronger technical component. So I think its business component and management are really first rate. But I think we have so much doing in Canada, I'd like to see a Canadian stamp on those contributions that would come through KIPPS.
Those are very, very important insights, Kelly, and they will be heard because you are so well respected and you are this visionary and this leader and truly a pioneer of the global industry. So we thank you for coming in today to share your deep thoughts with our audience.
Well, thank you, Stephen. It's very good to talk with you. I think during your presidency you made a good start on reinventing KIPPS, and I hope it'll thrive.
Well, thank you for that, Kelly, and I'm thinking for the next podcast, how does the work at the University of Toronto as a team?
Okay. Thank you, Stephen.